I would love to welcome everyone to another episode of Two Men in a Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle. My name is Jamie Sanchez, and I'm joined, as always, by Pastor Bob Brandon. And for our loyal listeners, we've kind of dropped the ball. Would that be a good word for it?
Or? No, I don't like saying that. But we've been off for a while. Different things pressing in on me, different jobs and so on, and you as well have had that. So it's been some time, but I don't want to talk about that anymore. I'm excited to be back into it. Our goal is to get all the way through the Bible.
We're back.
I'm not stopping in the middle of Leviticus. We're barely off the schneid here.
So, Bob, I made a couple of observations tonight as I was preparing.
What chapter are we on? Let's give them a heads up and all that.
We're on chapter 21 in Leviticus.
Okay.
And, you know, as we've said over and over as we've been reading through this, this isn't the most enjoyable part of the Bible for most people to really read and interpret and then internalize.
Okay.
You know, it's really difficult. But I think when we get started, I've got some, I think I'm going to get some wood on the
board. All right, so you want to get in a batter's box. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You want to do that now, or you want me to read it, and then you go, here's what I'm seeing?
I would prefer that you read it first, and then
all right.
Jump
well,
into that.
That's a good plan, because, you know, one of our purposes for the podcast is that people would become readers of the Bible for themselves, right? We're trying to equip them to do this. It's not our place to be between God and anybody else. It's our place to get alongside of people, not in front of them, but alongside of them and go, come on, here's how you do this, you know?
Because everybody's on their own journey. They're all at their different point in the journey.
Yeah.
So this book is applicable to any point.
That's right. And so what we try to offer as we read through the text are just what we think is important for understanding it.
Sure.
In other words, we expect our readers to come up with, you know, their own relationship with God.
Sure.
But we want them to know what this page is saying and for them to deal with that as they see fit.
And before we jump into it, Bob, you know, you said something there and you know, it wasn't underlined as we would do, you know, if we were writing something.
Mm-hmm.
But relationship with God is really, I think, where we are at right now.
Yeah.
It is that defining moment of your relationship with your Father.
Yeah, and you know that's not just talk onto the podcast. You know that's how I treat you, for instance.
Absolutely.
When you're going through certain things and different people will give you their advice and so on, you know, often I will say to you, yeah, but Jamie, you know, this is ultimately between you and God. What's he saying to you?
Right.
You know, he's the guy. So what do you hear him saying to you? And then do that.
Well, and for our listeners, you know, what I could share is what I've learned from you. And it is really developing that relationship as you would anyone or anything that you cared for, loved, and desired.
He's a person.
Yeah.
You know, you relate to him as a person.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's read Leviticus chapter 1, and then we'll discuss it. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the priests, the sons of Aaron, and say to them, 'No one shall defile himself for a dead person among his people, except for his relatives who are nearest to him, his mother and his father and his son and his daughter and his brother, also for his virgin sister, who's near to him because she's had no husband. For her he may defile himself. He shall not defile himself as a relative by marriage among his people, and so profane himself. They shall not make any baldness on their heads, nor shave off the edges of their beards, nor make any cuts in their flesh. They shall be holy to their God and not profane the name of their God. For they present the offerings by fire to the Lord, the food for their God, so they shall be holy. They shall not take a woman who is profaned by harlotry, nor shall they take a woman divorced from her husband, for he's holy to his God. You shall consecrate him, therefore, for he offers the food of your God. He shall be holy to you, for I am the Lord who sanctifies you. For I, the Lord who sanctifies you, am holy. Also, the daughter of any priest, if she profanes herself by harlotry, she profanes her father, and she shall be burned with fire. The priest who is highest among his brothers, on whose head the anointing oil has been poured, and who has been consecrated to wear the garments, shall not uncover his head, nor tear his clothes, nor shall he approach any dead person, nor defile himself even for his father or his mother, nor shall he go out of the sanctuary, nor profane the sanctuary of his God. For the consecration of the anointing oil of his God is on him. I am the Lord. He shall take a wife in her virginity, a widow or a divorced woman, or one who's profaned by harlotry. These he may not take, but rather he's to marry a virgin of his own people, that he may not profane his offspring among his people. For I am the Lord who sanctifies him. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to Aaron, saying, No man of your offspring throughout their generations who has a defect shall approach to offer the food of his God. For no one who has a defect shall approach a blind man, or a lame man, or who has a disfigured face, or any deformed limb, or a man who has a broken foot, or broken hand, or a hunchback, or a dwarf, or one who has a defect in his eye, or eczema, or scabs, or crushed testicles. No man among the descendants of Aaron the priest who has a defect is to come near to offer the Lord's offerings by fire. Since he has a defect, he shall not come near to offer the food of his God. He may eat the food of his God, both of the most holy and of the holy. Only he shall not go in to the veil or come near the altar, because he has a defect, that he may not profane my sanctuaries. For I am the Lord who sanctifies them. So Moses spoke to Aaron and to his sons and to all the sons of Israel.
All right, brother. So, a couple of observations that I made.
All right, let's see how you're doing.
I was preparing tonight.
Okay.
There's a couple of things that happen over and over and over in Leviticus.
Okay.
One is, then the Lord said to Moses.
Okay.
So, obviously, Moses is... Let me back up. That hasn't happened through what we've read, that it is so much that the Lord is talking, that God is talking directly to one person. He talked to Abraham, he talked to Noah.
Oh, yeah.
Talked to Adam.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Joseph knew him.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
But every, I counted like 20 some odd times.
It's a great, excuse me, great observation. So I think, you know, interrupt me when you want to say more, but it sounds like what you're pointing out is, you know, the place Moses has in the history of Israel is unsurpassed. You know, like, for instance, when you said Abraham, you know, spoke to him, well, how do you know that? Moses wrote that. You
right.
know,
right.
even that is coming through Moses.
Right.
So he is, to Moses, his place in the Bible is, you could hardly over-exaggerate it. You know, one real quick observation from that is when Jesus comes and speaks the Sermon on the Mount and says, for instance, you have heard that it was said, and he's essentially quoting Moses, and then he says, but I say to you, they would have just...
cringed, right?
I mean,
more than cringed.
What he's saying is he's God. Ain't nobody outranks Moses. You don't take what Moses said and then say, but I say. You know, you're putting yourself above Moses, and he is. So you, I take what you're pointing out is, you know, Moses' role in the revelation of God's words is unparalleled.
Well, and as we're reading through Leviticus, Bob, if... So... Let me kind of try to use an analogy here, or let me just put it in the language that it's written. So if you're an Israelite and Moses is coming to you saying, I just spoke with God.
Yeah. And they saw him go up out. You know, that's, they would believe that because they saw God on the mountain. They see the thunder, the lightning, and Moses goes up there and his face is different. When he comes back, he has to veil his face because he's glowing.
Right.
So they're not going, oh yeah, sure, you think you, they're not saying that. They're going, they're bowing down. And you remember, you pointed this out even when we read it. Do you remember that verse where God says to Moses, I'll make you like God?
Right.
I mean, his place is unsurpassed.
I mean, that would...
It's unparalleled.
I that would drop me to the ground if God came and said that to me. I mean...
You'd back off right away, wouldn't
yeah.
you? You go, I, and Moses did the same, right? He does not want the job. And that's part of why he's in the job.
So, right,
it's almost
yeah.
like the guys in our country that want to be president. I'm always like,
yeah,
you know, why would you even want that job? You know.
So, if we look at this, so as we're out talking to other people, Bob, you know, this is one of the chapters where, you know, they have trouble with it, and I think there's one word that really creates the trouble, which is my second observation.
Okay.
And then I'm going to, you know, hopefully tie it up with my third observation.
Okay.
But it's the word law.
Okay. Where did you see that?
The laws concerning the offerings. This...
Well, wait. Where in the text? Because I see that in the outline.
Well, just in the outline. Not
okay.
in the text.
Okay.
Right?
But
that's what
it is. Oh, sure. Moses will say that in other places. These are the ordinances, the commandments.
The law.
Okay, yeah.
And when you're sharing the word and you get to some of this material, it's that law thing that really is the hard thing to come to grips with.
Okay.
You know, but here is Moses telling us that this is what God told him.
Okay.
Now, that brings me to my third observation.
Okay, let's go to three before I interact with two. That's good.
And it really changed the way that I read Leviticus.
Okay.
So, what I'm seeing here is, before I was kind of in the same place, caught up in the law thing. Like, well, I'm not going to be killing any rams or...
Yeah, right.
You know, how do I know if it's a lame ram? You know, I don't know.
Okay.
How am I going to do that? So, you know, I think that we could get caught up in that. But the thing to realize, or that I realized as I went through this, it encompasses everything we do in everyday life.
Yeah.
It's how you interact with people.
Yeah.
How, you know, when you eat. That you're not separate from God then.
Right.
You're not separate from God when you do your work. You're not separate from God when you have conversations. God is there 24/7 in our language.
Okay.
And so as I read through this, you know, earlier we've talked about it as meet Dad. Here's how
mm-hmm.
you live with Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Now I see it differently, that what Dad is saying is, I want to be part of every part of your life, whether whether it's
but how is that different than what we've been saying? I think that's what I have been saying.
Well, it's
meet
different
Dad.
For me.
You're living in his house. You're with him all the time.
Yeah.
It's not you went to church and you met
mm-hmm.
with Dad for an hour on Sunday before the game. It's he's with you watching the game. He's with you when you drove to the game. He's with you coming home.
It's not that it's different, Bob, but I think I finally...
It sunk in.
I had the realization, and I hope that I could share that with our listeners. That,
okay.
You know, look at this book a little bit differently.
All right, so let me ask you some more questions then.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget your second point. I want to go back to your second point. But so why did it take you that long to come to that realization? I'm not asking you this critically. I'm saying, is it that keeps us from seeing what's been right there the whole time?
I think it was the word law.
Okay. So back to this. Okay.
It was the word law.
When you hear law, so metaphorically, when you hear law, does your heart, which I'm using heart in the sense of your inner person, right? Mm-hmm. Does it kind of clamp up a little bit?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you don't give me the law, right?
Right.
Like you're okay.
And so, you know, when I was preparing tonight, you know, I went ahead and read through the rest of it, but you see that over and over and over again. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying,
"Oh yeah."
So the other thing that I've noticed over and over and over again in this particular book, Bob, is his reminder to us that I am the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I am the Lord, your God.
Mm-hmm.
I am the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I am the Lord. It's over and over and over again.
Yeah. Okay, let's take that. Let's answer both of those things a little bit. So this is going to be a little bit of a discussion, but I think this is really good for people to hear because though we say it, it's kind of like coaching.
Sure.
Let me diverge just for a second because I got some kids that want to be competitive swimming. Some of them are really good. Josiah Middaugh came to me this week. Hey, I want to work on my swimming. Josiah's fourth in the world in Xterra, you know, and he wants to get better. So I'm bringing tapping into these coaching experiences, and I get frustrated, but I know my expectation is I tell you how to do it, and you do it. Okay, that's my expectation. But I know the reality is I'm going to have to tell him that 50, 100, 200 times before he really does it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how it works out. And I have to remind myself, you know, don't get angry. You know, keep telling them.
Yeah,
you know,
I coach sixth grade basketball.
For them,
so
they've
right
just got to hear it so many times. And so that's part of what the Lord's doing here. So what are they, though, struggling with? You know, once again, 1450 BC, you're Israelite. And you keep hearing God say, I am the Lord. You know, why is he telling you that? Because they're still going. As strange as it sounds, they're still going, I don't know, man. Is it Osiris? Is it Isis? Is it Amun? Is it Molech? Is it Marduk? I mean, they've got this whole worldview in their mind of this gigantic pantheon in heaven, and maybe Yahweh's one of those guys.
It's almost like they're hedging their bets.
Yeah, and so he continues to remind them, no, it's just me, and they've got to hear it over and over. See, what we're coming from in our culture is not that. Most people are not raised in the United States in the 20th or 21st century now thinking, you know, there's a bunch of gods out there and I wonder who. There's a bunch of religions.
Sure,
but,
yes.
You know, what we struggle with in our culture is, you know, this is nice, but I don't know, maybe we evolved, man. All those physicists and chemists and biologists, doctors are saying we did. I don't know. Well, guess what? Honest to goodness, those guys are wrong who are saying that. There is a God. We were created. We are his image. And you just need to hear that over and over and over until it begins to shape you, you know, from the inside out into what he created you really to be. And that's what they're going through. That's why he's repeating that to them. And so even to get back to the text before we go to your second point, I will get back to that, but he, like this, don't defile yourselves for the dead. Well, who was doing that? The Egyptians. Have you ever heard of this book called the Egyptian Book of the Dead?
Uh-uh.
I've got copies of it in my house. It is hundreds of pages of their funeral rites and how they prepared for burial and you know, mummies, right? That's
mm-hmm.
Egypt. Preserving a dead person. The cult of the dead was gigantic in the ancient Near East. That's why you had the last chapter and this chapter mentioning things like don't do that. That's, you know, worship of the dead, kin worship, and, you know, ancestral worship and
sure.
all that. That's what he's preaching against. Don't do that. Death is an abomination to God. That's not what he built into his original creation. There's no worship around the dead. But they are going to have to hear that 1,000 times before that sinks into them. But that's the background of what's going on here.
Well, and you know, back to what we were talking about, it's God saying it. You know, let's put it in present day tense. You know, it doesn't happen this way. But let's say you came to me, Bob, and you said, "Hey, Jamie, I just talked to God, and here's what he has to say." Yeah. I would hope that my heart would be
open to it, or
right.
Well, but also discerning, like, I don't know. You're right. Talking to God.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But here's God laying it out, and he's telling us.
Yeah.
Not only when you wake up, it's everything when you
do. Yeah, 24/7, everything you do.
The dead, the everything.
Every aspect of life.
Because they're not doing it at this time.
You have to see it the way I'm seeing it.
That's what
he's saying. And they're not arguing it. That's right. They're not arguing with Moses, like, are you really talking to God? They know he is.
Right.
He's right there. While he's writing this, there's this pillar of fire at night and a cloud by day. I mean, they know he is.
He's there.
So they're not arguing the source. It's just taking a while to sink in to him. Okay, but so let's talk about your second point, though. When you hear the word law, you metaphorically tense, you know, I don't know how I'm going to hear this. If somebody sits down and says, hey, let me tell you a story, you know, oh, okay, you're all ears, right? Somebody goes, let me tell you the law, and you back up. I mean, instantly, like, whoa,
well, you're
going
to cross your arms.
Cross your arms, whoa. Okay, so that's what we do with the Lord, and that's what, see, down through the centuries, the Jews worshipped, essentially, the law. That was pure and holy to them. It became just the law. And when you have Paul in the New Testament explaining what that law really was, they're ready to kill him. And they try to kill him a couple
sure.
of times for what he's saying about the law. Because he says, for instance, you know, this thing was, it wasn't ever given to you to, in a sense, you know, make you holy before God. I know it says things like that, and there is that sense to it, but it's really this x-ray. It's an MRI into your heart. It's showing you need God to forgive you. That's the real purpose for this. Mm-hmm. Don't worship the law like it's the end result. The purpose of the law is to point you to a bigger thing, i.e. God. So, for instance, Paul will say in Galatians, in Romans, you know, I didn't have any problem with coveting until God said, don't covet. And then I began to do that. In other words, the law combined, what we're bringing to the law is a sin nature.
Mm-hmm.
When you plug the law into a sin nature, it ignites like a like throwing gasoline on a fire, and you start, your sin nature becomes alive and becomes manifest. That actually was the purpose for the law. So God could say, let me cure that. You know, in other words, take today, and you go into a doctor's office for a PSA or an MRI or an X-ray or, you know, some kind of biopsy, and you're going in there thinking you're good. And you come out and the doc goes, hey, you've got cancer. Is that of value to you? Do you want to know that? So
sure.
Maybe you can treat it. Okay, that's the purpose of the law, was to show the Israelites you have sin. I'm trying to tell you guys how we can live together, and I'm holy, and what you're bringing to me is sinful. So I've got to deal with that. That's the purpose of the law. The law wasn't given so that, oh, now, you know, look how great we are compared to the other people. There are subpoints to the law, and there's a real sense in which it would have that effect. They were to be different than Israel and Babylon, and very different. So the law does have a sanctifying secondary effect. But its primary effect was to say, you are sinful. Well, then you can go, well, is there a cure?
Right.
And God says, yes, but you're never going to ask me for the cure if you don't realize you have the disease. Okay, so the cure amounts to this. Well, what's the cure? Believe the truth. and there's this sacrifice coming for your sin that can purify you, truly purify
to redeem
you.
Us.
You can be redeemed, but the way you access that redemption is by believing the truth. But you're never even going to ask for the cure. You're not going to have any desire for it unless you realize you're sick.
Well, and if we don't examine all aspects of our lives and how God really is a part of every aspect of our lives, then we're really missing out on a lot of things.
He wants to run the whole thing. He's God.
Yeah, it's His will, it's perfect, and it's holy.
Yeah.
So when you take that, you know, from what you've taught me, Bob, if God doesn't lie,
that's
you
right.
always believe Him, how often will you be wrong?
Never.
Never.
Let's say the flip side. How often would you be right? Every
Always.
Time.
So, as I'm reading Leviticus, you know, now, just and literally after tonight preparing for our podcast, Bob, I knew it was, you know, like we had talked, this is life with God.
Mm-hmm.
But I really hadn't, until I counted how many times it said that the Lord spoke to Moses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not... I mean, he's spoken a lot, but it's like every chapter almost begins with the Lord spoke to Moses.
That's right.
Almost emphasizing.
Yeah, remember him being up on the mountain for 40 days?
Mm-hmm.
What's he doing?
Speaking
he's putting
God.
This down, right?
Yeah.
He's putting down their conversations.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's not up there twiddling his thumbs.
And God makes a point of making sure that Moses writes down that I am the Lord,
that's
your
right.
God.
That's right.
Not because I've got a great idea, you know, because,
hey,
you know, I know the guy.
Yeah.
I know the guy who's in charge. He says, I'm telling you this because I am the Lord your God.
Yeah.
And like we've talked, this is life in God's house. This is how you live in God's house. But here it's breaking it down to... It's every aspect of your life.
Yeah, everything ultimately is going to come back to that point.
Mm-hmm.
I am God.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just fast forward it just one more minute because this is always on my mind. Again, so to our culture, we're not born into a culture that thinks there are hundreds, perhaps thousands of deities. What are we born into? There is no God. See,
right.
We've gone the opposite direction. No, there's just chemistry and physics and biology. That's it. There's no God. People thought that long ago because they didn't know anything. So they had to explain the world by, you know, you had to punt back to, well, there's a supernatural thing.
Right.
You know, how do the flowers come up? Oh, there must be a God. Who made the sun rise today? There must be a God. Well, now that we know there's gravity and orbital circuits around the sun, well, now we know there's no God, really. That's wrong. There is a God. Those guys were so much closer to the truth than we are today. It's not even funny. But you need to remind yourself every day there is a God, and His name is Jesus Christ. Because
Absolutely.
Our culture is going to say the opposite all
Absolutely.
The time.
Absolutely. And I think our text tonight really speaks to that, you know. We're talking about the dead, you know. Again, not a favorite subject of most people.
Right.
But we're talking about the dead. And you brought it up. What God's really telling us is, again, I'm there while this is happening too.
Yeah. Think of this, Jamie, like even as we explore cultural aspects of what's on these pages, why is there death? See, our culture is just going to say, well, there's no eternal life. You live, you know, a great life, 70, 80 plus years, and then you die. That's just it. There's no eternal life. That is not the real picture.
No,
what is the reason for death? They think it's because...
Separation.
Sin.
Yes.
Right? That's the reason for death, and that's what our culture will not address.
When we became separate from God, when that gap was created in between us, and the words that always come to my mind when I think about that point in history is, hey Adam, where are you?
That's right. That little sentence, you know, those three words, oh, the magnitude of what he's asking.
And
or
so,
pointing out, because he's really not asking. He knows where Adam is. It's what he's pointing out with that question. So, Jamie, even today, you know, I'll do funerals from time to time, and some people will come to me and, you know, I kind of want a party when I die. I don't want this solemn occasion. You know, I want you guys, the absurdity of that. You want us to celebrate your death. You know, you have to be kidding me. That death represents everything that's wrong with the world. Not you as a terrible person,
right,
I mean,
right.
You know, but what's theologically, you are 180 degrees off of what's happening. And I'm not saying there aren't great things you can say about a person, you know, who lived a great life and so on, but this is not a celebration.
Well, if we're going to celebrate anything, it's their eternal life.
But even there, it's not, you know, when Jesus shows up at Lazarus's tomb, he wept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't partying because, Lazarus, you know, he was a believer. There wasn't a party there. He wept over that. It's not the way it was supposed to be.
Let me just, you know, paint a picture on that, Bob, is, you know, that came to my mind as he brought that up. Let's say I was just a lowly secretary to God, and death happened. If I understood what death was and the reason for death, I would always weep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the fact that the reason we died, we weren't made that way. We were not created that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that death happens is because we separated ourselves from not only our father, but our family.
Source of life, everything we had. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So, to the text, Jamie, good job getting in the batter's box and getting some stick on the ball. That was good.
That's single.
That's not, well, you doubled in the gap. That was pretty good.
We got some runners
on
base.
The point is, though, that you're learning to be a reader of the text, right? In other words, you're listening to God. You're sitting in his lap and reading his words with him, and you're starting to see.
Yeah.
So that's great. So as far as the text is concerned, then, maybe only a couple things to point out, because so many of these things are so culturally related, like you said. You know, here we are in your house, and, you know, I'm looking out at your yard there. You don't have any sheep out there. Next Sunday, we're not going to take a sheep in there and slit its throat. But that was part of their worship. Okay, so what is part of our worship? You know, giving, singing, things like that, all needs to be done purely, right? That's what he's saying. No defects, right, with some of these priests. He's not, let me tell you, does when you read that text, you know, does God love a dwarf?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, he died for him. He
sure
loves that guy. Okay, what he's saying is, here's how I would explain not just this chapter, but much of Leviticus. So imagine if I was, you're watching my hand make a circle in the air, but imagine if this was a whiteboard and I had my dry erase marker, okay? And I draw a circle in the middle of that whiteboard and I label that God/holy,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Then a circle just outside of that and I say high priest, okay? Then a circle beyond that one, the priesthood. Then a circle a little bit bigger, Israel. Then the biggest circle, the nations.
Okay.
All right. What you're looking at there in that target or bullseye scenario are levels of holiness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the high priest has certain rules, right? The priest can't do a funeral, can't get involved in all these rituals for the dead, except for his mom or dad.
Right.
So the high priest can't even do that. Right? The closer you get to God, the more and more holy that space is. And God has nothing to do with death, so you can't be involved in that. But he knows it's part of life,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and people have to do that. So the priests can do that. The high priest can't do it at all. The priests can do it for their parents. Okay? The people can be involved in those things. And the Gentiles, you know, they're lost out there. We're trying to reach those guys. That's what's going on in this text. They're explaining levels of holiness. So a dwarf can't be a high priest. Not because he's immoral. It's just that disfiguration is just a symbol of sin. That's all he's saying. You know, that person's ultimately no different than a high priest. We all have to come to God by faith and so on. But as far as the picture I'm trying to paint for you guys, don't bring that to me as far as my holiness. You know what I mean? That's what he's saying.
Let's you know, for our listeners, let's you know, share a little hope there. You know, that we all have spiritual gifts, Bob. You know, that particular person's spiritual gift may not be the priesthood.
Yeah, that's right. So let me clarify what you're saying there. Within that whole discussion, there are spiritual gifts and there are offices.
Right.
You know, a dwarf may have a gift.
Yeah.
And he might be a Levite and may very well have a gift of like a pastoral, Levitical kind of gift, but he can't hold this office of high priest because of that. But can he function with others that way? Oh, yeah.
And
he can do his ministry. He can do everything he's designed to do.
And it doesn't affect the end game. It doesn't affect where
any of us are. God's painting a picture that I'm holy. You don't bring fallen stuff to me.
Right.
But do I love that dwarf? I died for him.
Mm-hmm.
I love that guy.
Yep.
Right? And when I set all this stuff straight, guess what? That guy's sitting in my lap. I'm going to make that guy whole. He's going to be everything he was always designed to be.
When we do this podcast,
you just have to read the whole story. He's the answer to all that stuff. He's going to make it right.
Well, and for our listeners, we need to go out and we need to be convicted of sharing this truth.
Yeah, who has the real answers? We do. And we sit around cowering in a corner like, I don't want to stir up trouble.
Yeah, don't talk about religions or politics.
Right.
Religion or politics.
And it's like, come on. You know, we've been talking about this a lot in church lately, but Paul, it just as typical of all the apostles, he gets the most airtime in the New Testament, but he confronted his culture head on all the time with the truth.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, because that's really what I feel here, is that God is confronting us with the truth.
Yeah.
In Leviticus, that's what you get. God spoke to Moses. God said, because I am the Lord, because I am the Lord your God.
Yep.
That's the truth.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
You know, let me say this too, Jamie, is because there are details in the text, but I really don't feel like we have to go through. I think people will pick that up when they read, okay, a priest can do this, a high priest cannot do that. You know,
He's
just talking about levels of holiness,
okay,
who you can marry and so on, right? And he's trying to explain this big picture. This is how we're going to relate to the world around us and so on. So I think our readers have that. But what I wanted to point out is, look at the very last verse of chapter 21. So Moses spoke to Aaron, the high priest, and to his sons, that's the priesthood, and to all the sons of Israel.
So it's that.
Yes, that's right. But the point is, their whole nation was to be a nation of priests. See, you would not have this in Egypt or Babylon or Canaan. If you had a great high priest, he wouldn't be saying, teach all the people this.
Mm.
That's not their goal. The priesthood was a power player in the game. You got the king, you got the priest, and they're calling the shots. See, in Israel, everybody was to be a priest in that sense. It's very different than the ancient Near East. Very different.
Well, and really, Bob, this goes to the title of this podcast, Two Men in the Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle.
Yeah.
You've got to know God. You've got to know him.
To be engaged in the cosmic battle. You can't. Well, everybody's in the battle. To be engaged successfully, you have to know God.
And if you don't know, and I don't want to call them idiosyncrasies, because they're not. They're facts. They're facts about here's how our family.
Okay. Yeah, let's say it like this. So when you talk about knowing God in the context of the cosmic battle, what's lesson number one? He's holy.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over and over,
mm-hmm.
He's going to tell you that. So you don't approach him, for instance, on your terms. You approach him on his terms. He's holy. He outranks us. We're not peers. As intimate as he wants to be, you know, come
mm-hmm.
sit in my lap. We're not peers. Okay? So when you hear his words, you chew on them, you know,
mm-hmm.
but don't put up the wall or the barrier. Like, who are you to give me a law? Well, he's God. That's
yeah.
who.
Who are you not to obey?
Yeah, that's a better way to say it. Let's turn that around.
Yeah.
Who are you to reject his laws? And the majority of people live their lives in that rebellion. And it's, you know, on the end day, you know, find out, oh, man, not good.
Well, and it's tonight, you know, our text wasn't the most exciting.
All right, I can't wait to read Leviticus 22 about crushed testicles. I can't
right,
wait to hear it.
Right.
Yeah, that's not what's going on.
That's not the point.
Yeah.
You know, and the more I read Leviticus, I understand more. I'm like, okay.
There's a lot of power in there.
You know, and maybe it's the 40 plus years that I've been spiritually dull.
Yeah.
You know, that I can attribute to not knowing
right.
what he's saying.
Right.
But
right.
I thank him for sharpening me
yeah.
over the last 4 years.
Yeah, that's right.
So that I could be aware of what he's saying here and not just be like every other time I've even attempted to read this. I'm like, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Where's Matthew?
Yeah.
You know?
Let me get through this part.
Yeah, let me get through this, you know, what we'd call the dull part. And it's really the main course.
The foundation for everything else that happens. And think of it this way. Moses wrote how many books of the Bible?
Five.
Okay. So 1, 2, 3, 4. You're looking at my hand with five digits sticking. What's right in the middle? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. Right in the middle of everything Moses had to say was this book. And they arrange things very much that way. You know, the beginning and the end, and then the middle was the core idea. The Leviticus is huge in understanding who God is.
And isn't
it's coaching 101. Is, you know, here's how you do it. I'm the Lord your God. I'm holy. That's what he's saying 1,000 times in this book.
Isn't it ironic, though, Bob? I mean, you've been a pastor. You've come to faith 30 years now.
Yeah.
Is this one of the most exciting books that your flock, I'll call them, your flock comes to you and says, hey, Bob,
no,
I'm really excited
no.
about
Leviticus. Yeah, but here's what it, and here's, you know, back to this analogy, like with the swimmers. They, when I first begin to talk to them, they hate what I'm telling them to do. You know, it's usually triathletes, sometimes swimmers, but, you know, swimming's part of triathlon, and I go, okay, here's what you need to do. Because I'm not going to go coach you every day. You need
right.
to come in, and I'll work with you once a week and all that, but I don't have the time to coach swimming anymore. So here's what you need to do when you leave me. And I usually tell them the most bizarre thing they've ever heard. You know, like, I just want you to kick on your side for 1,000 yards. Whatever time you have left, you can swim. But until you solve that issue, it does you no good to keep working on your swimming. Because all you're doing is complicating your issues.
And
your fundamental issue is you don't know how to kick and balance in the water. So the parallel is, what's Israel's fundamental issue? They don't understand there's only one God and that he's holy. So until you get that, you can't move forward. You can't go to step 3 until you get 1 and 2 down. So I'm telling these guys, just go back and kick till you can't believe it. And then you come back to me. So this girl, about a year ago, started swimming with me. She won the ex-terrorist, the fastest in the country now, because she did just some of what I was telling her to do. She did some of it. If she'd have done all of it, she would have won by a mile. But they hate what I'm telling them. But it's like, you can't move forward until you do this.
Right. Well, and most anyone that has achieved a higher level a higher level of anything understands that.
Yeah, you have to get those basics. You know, I'm a sports guy at heart. Like Michael Jordan, I think we got caught up with his flamboyance, you know. Mm. Like he can fly, you know, Air Jordan, man. Sure. He can outjump everybody. You know what he could really do better than anybody else? He was faster. He could dribble. He could play defense. He could do every basic thing better than anybody else. So what you noticed was the flamboyant thing.
Sure.
But what a coach is looking at is, oh, man, that guy can shoot and dribble and play defense.
The foundation.
He can do the fundamental things. So Leviticus is, here's these fundamental things to our relationship. And if you can do those, if you can realize I am God and there's only one up here, and that's me, mm-hmm. and I'm holy. If you can master those two things in your life, sky's the limit for what you can do spiritually. And if you can't do those, doesn't matter. You can be, you know, in the Christian faith, I know I'm fired up now. Can you hear it in my voice?
Yeah, I can.
But, you know, we often, like someone will, we think, oh, if Michael Jordan became a Christian, he could be, you know, the biggest, he might be nothing.
Sure.
Unless you can do those two things, it doesn't matter how much money you have, how much fame you have, if you cannot get on board with one God, his name is Jesus Christ, that he's holy, you can't move forward past that. But if you can do those two, it doesn't matter what else you have. You could be dirt poor. You could have no resources. You could have nothing. And in his eyes, he's looking at you like you're Michael. That's my guy. That guy understands who I am and that I'm holy. Like, what is Paul bringing to the table other than he believes God?
Well, and if you look at this, I mean, God doesn't get, and I'm making quotation, he doesn't get to make the rules. He makes the rules.
Yeah, he not even that. He is the rule.
There you go.
What he's saying isn't he's making it.
Yeah.
You know, it's from him.
Right.
It's part of him.
This is who you are. That's what he's telling us. This is who we are.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Leviticus 22. Or 21.
21.
Way to go. We'll do 22 next time.
Woo!
Let's say a prayer, Jamie.
I may not sleep tonight, Bubba.
All right.
You know, you've got me a little fired up.
All right, here we go. Lord, so when we're full of your words, that is, when we're full of your spirit, we're in a position of power. We can conform our lives to you. We can tell others who you are. When we're not full of your words, we have no power. All our resources that you've blessed us with amount to nothing. So we ask that you would continue to fill us with your words and send forth this podcast and accomplish what you will through it. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.